So we've got about 10 minutes before I thought we would break for lunch about 12:30 and then come back at 2. So it's a good period of time. Maybe we'll go a little over 12:30 depending on questions. But I thought I would just take a couple of questions and then I'm going to give you some suggestions for lunch. Not food, but practice. So any questions really about anything we've talked about? If you have questions about the meditation that we did or the walking meditation with the breath and the body, and again, setting the intention has been our main focus, right? Questions or thoughts, observations, Laura?
In the walking meditation, I couldn't really get in touch with the breath other than through my nose, and then I wasn't sure. I've had voice classes where the diaphragm goes up and down, and I thought that was more intellectual to think of which way the diaphragm's going. So can you go back to the breath through the
I think you
nose?
can go back to the breath through the nose. It's a little bit easier, you're right. I think using the diaphragm could be useful if it feels pleasant, if that was worked for you in the past. That's a common thing that people say. And I learned with the feet. So for like 10, 12 years, I did it with the feet. And then I started studying with my teacher, and he said, that's not the way we do it in Thailand. We use the breath. And he suggested right in here. I think as he's been back in the States, he's kind of been a little more lenient and said, if you want to use the nose. But I think it's better if you do it here because you maintain that center of gravity. Because once you get out there into the world, the idea is you want to maintain awareness and the attention tends to fly off. So I did it for 10, 15 years with the feet. It was hard to do it here. It took me a while, but I stayed with it. And I think there's a benefit in doing it here. In here, but at first you have to sort of like maybe breathe a little deeper or use a visualization. It took me a little bit of time, but it's like everything else. The more I practice with it now, I can connect with it pretty easily. So I think if you can work with establishing it in here, it's a little better. The other piece about that is once I started doing this with the breath in the walking, my whole practice changed. Because all of a sudden the practice started to make sense to me because I would use the breath and the sitting and then the feet and the walking and it was like, it was discordant. It was like then once it was like, oh, the breath and the sitting, the breath and the walking, even if it's at a different place in the walking, everything just started to come together for me, and my practice got so much stronger. Not just the walking, but the sitting as well. So, my suggestion is to learn to practice walking meditation with the breath. Again, it tends not to be the way that it's taught, and some teachers teach it that way. But I found that's the way I teach it, and can make a huge difference. It's bringing you into the body, That's the thing, too. The feet, it's really hard to connect to the body, and it's like if you're feeling your feet, it's harder to connect to your body and harder to connect to your heart. If you're feeling your breath, and you have that center of gravity, the whole idea is, and you get into the body so that you can get into the heart. Remember, that's the purpose. That's the purpose, ultimately. You're present, you're in the body, you're not in the head, and ultimately you can be in the heart, right? You may have even noticed in the walking when you set the intention, if the awareness was here, you could get into the heart. So I would play with it, try it different ways. I mean, it's a good question. The Thai attitude with this is, which I didn't even realize it was the Thai attitude, and when I started teaching this to people, I was like, it's good enough. Am I really feeling the breath or do I have a stomach? It's good enough. That's sort of the Thai attitude. Good enough. Good enough. Am I feeling it or am I imagining it? Good enough. Good enough. So you sort of have to have that kind of an attitude around it. So I think it's really useful to do this. Again, your purpose is to get into the body, to get into the body, and then into the heart.
If I touched my stomach, I could feel it going in and out.
You don't want to do that all the time, but when you're learning it, that's a good way to, you can practice it that way, but eventually, because ultimately we're getting to the point where you can do it whatever you're doing. So like when you're talking to me, there's some sense of the breath, or as you're listening to me, you're grounded in the breath. And you usually don't want to talk, you know, it's like somebody's thinking, why is she putting her hand on her stomach, you know? So the idea is that ultimately you're able to stay with the breath in all postures so that you can be in the heart in all postures, because that's when you need to be in the heart, right? When you're with friends, when you're doing what you're doing, when you're, like Sarah was talking about, when you're deciding things that you need to do, you know, it's not going to be in the sitting meditation, it's going to be in your life. So you want to be in the body, in the heart, in your life. So that's really, you know, why we're doing this, you know? Yeah.
Huh. How do you deal with when you have a dis-ease in the physical body, say a knee or something that's bothering you? How do you, first there's a resistance to being in the body.
Right.
And how do you get to the heart when you're constantly being called back to that discomfort?
Right, right. I mean, there's a lot of elements to that question. The first thing that you need to learn to do is to put it to the side. So there was, you know, I mean, one of the things that I was taught was like, go into it. But I never had enough concentration to go into it, right? So I would get caught in it. I would just generate more aversion to it. So the first thing my teacher taught me was like, put it to the side. Put it to the side. That's and then it was like, oh, so compassionate, you know, that I don't have to go into that anymore. So the first thing that you have to learn to do is put it to the side, which means you're going to try to feel the breath somewhere away from that area. So you're probably going to want to use your nostrils because you need to get away from this area, right? And to put it to the side. Pardon me?
Kind of as far away as possible.
Exactly.
Okay, somewhere else.
Yeah. And then you can start to learn to see the aversion to it, because that's the issue, right? Oh, there's aversion to that. All right, can I put the aversion to the side? Have compassion. Once you get stronger concentration, you need to learn to go into it and understand, all right, there's the sensation and the disliking of it. Can I let go of the sensation? The disliking. Can't let go of the sensation. I mean, you can move. So if you need to move, move. It becomes a little tricky if you're doing full body awareness, right? Because if you have pain in there, you don't want to be, you know. So what we usually do with full body awareness is focus on the places that are really easeful. I would stay away from this area. And then if the whole body gets really ease, if enough of the body gets easeful, oftentimes this will ease up. But if it doesn't, then you have to stay away from that area. Okay, so that's a little tricky if you have, you know, sometimes like I'll be on a retreat and I'll start to have pain in different parts of the body. I can't do the full body awareness so much. So, I mean, I had a student recently passed away. He had neuropathy in his legs, you know, which is very painful. But he learned to really be able to develop the full body awareness from the waist up, you know, and it was, and so he could really start to feel more at home in his body because at least he could get in and put that. And then sometimes it would actually go into the legs. So the idea is you need to, that's why one-pointedness is really useful. It's like you need to find a place, a good home for the mind that feels good. And then you build from there. And the last terrain is the place that's painful. That's the sort of the last, I mean, eventually you have to kind of, but sometimes you need to put it to the side anyway. But, you know, one-pointedness is important. Find a place that's as far away from it as you can get. Let that place be really easeful. Because once, if that starts to get easeful and you have some ease, and then maybe some ease in some other parts of the body, this isn't so much of a problem. But if all you know is this, you got a problem. You know, if the rest of it feels, eh, and this, but if you start to feel some ease and some well-being in the breath and some parts of the body, then this becomes more manageable. And the things in life that are difficult become more manageable. So it's really important to develop a pleasant abiding.
That's very helpful because other teachers have talked about experiencing going into that pain and my whole body or mind, wherever the issue is, resistance.
Totally.
So
yeah, because what the Buddha taught was
first
you have to learn to be able to put things to the side, then you need to be able to learn to develop a pleasurable abiding, then you're in a position to take on things that are painful. Including the painful things in your life, but you do that from a place of strength. You know, that's what he taught, but it doesn't get taught that way. And that's I would sit in retreats and it was terrible. But then I learned, you know, I learned in skillful intention, and then I learned to cultivate ease and well-being in the body. And then I could kind of work with it a little bit, but then it wasn't so much of an issue. So to me, it's, that instruction can be is very problematic. You know, the Buddha said, go into those things that are painful when you can do it from a place of strength. And a mark that you're able to be able to go into something that's painful, you know what it is? You're not trying to get rid of it. You shouldn't try to go into anything until you can be okay with it being there, and there's not, because people want to go into it so I can get rid of it, you know? It's like, if that's there, then you're not ready to go into it, you know? That's a really important thing. You know, and it's compassionate. You know, it's compassionate. It's loving. That was the thing for me. It's like, this is the first time somebody gave me a loving instruction, you know? All my life I was going into places that were painful. Just like, kind of, see how you, when you start learning this quality of intention, then you start learning to be able to discern what's good for me, what's not, you know? That changed my whole practice when he told me that years ago. He said, don't do that. Why are you doing it? He said it in a pretty loving way, maybe not so loving, but it was like, it changed my practice. It was like, you mean I don't have to go into that? You know? Yeah.
So when you spoke about how you used to approach meditation with, you know, a lot of aversion and stuff, that resonated with me. I've been practicing for many, many years, and I have so much trouble doing a daily practice. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm okay here, I'm okay in retreats. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if you might have any loving kindness suggestions for being able to practice daily.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I'm going to talk about something at the end, which is keeping the mind bright, which I talked about before, that quality of joy. Because when you meditate with others, the mind is bright, you feel joy, and that's why, you know, it's like, I feel good. So you have to, when you're on your own, you have to cultivate that yourself. And I talked about that. So you reflect on your good qualities. You reflect on the blessing of the practice. I'm going to hopefully have time to do that at the end. So usually what we try to do at the beginning of the meditation is set the intention, bring some brightness to the mind, bring some joy to the mind, recognize, have gratitude for what you're doing and meditating and the good qualities that you're bringing to it to bring some joy to the mind. So that's really important. I mean, there's a lot of things, but I think the most important thing is what we've talked about today. You know, you have to see the resistance. You have to see the not wanting to do it, right? So what I usually suggest is set a time. I'm going to meditate every morning at 8:00 and then, you know, start to look at how you're relating to that. 7:55, what's the mind doing? I don't want to meditate. Oh, I got too many other things to do, right? So you see just what we're talking about, right? You're not even on the cushion yet, but you're seeing, oh, there's resistance. And then you're reminding yourself, I'm doing this out of love. I'm doing this out of compassion. Mm-hmm. And when you're meditating, you're continuing to do that. The meditation should be loving and compassionate. If you're doing it with aversion, you know, you're not going to want to do it. So I was pretty much where you were. I'd been meditating for many years, but I had hit a plateau, basically. So I had to learn these skills. Once I did, it changed everything. The last piece I'll mention, and, you know, again, there's many pieces to this, but I think that's the most important, is the meditation has to be pleasurable. If it's not pleasurable, you're only going to take it so far. So I was focusing on pain. I wasn't cultivating pleasure. Once I started cultivating pleasure and ease and well-being, it was like, oh, this is cool. I want to do this. Because you have to have, the Buddha said he couldn't meditate without thinking about other stuff that he wanted to do until the meditation was pleasurable. So it has to be pleasurable. So, and you sort of, another thing that happens is when you start using, and you know, it's not really that people, it's not really a different instruction than what people are giving, it's just a more advanced instruction. But it means there's more instruction, a more advanced instruction, what I just did. But it means there's more instruction, so there's more you have to do. You know, because it's like it's boring. I'm mindful of the breath, mindful of that. No, you're setting your intention. You keep reminding yourself to stay with the breath. You're cultivating an easeful breath. You're cultivating a full body awareness. You know, you can do scanning. So there's a lot more to do. So there's a lot more interest. And, you know, the meditation becomes something that, you know, you can bring a lot more interest to. And you have a lot more to do with it. So, you know, it's like anything else. If you have good instruction, you know, you can develop that ability to sit on your own and develop a strong practice. You know, once I got that kind of instruction, it really changed things for me. But I think the most important thing is just what we've talked about this morning. It has to be loving. It has to be compassionate. You know?
Thank you.
In the back there, I think, yeah.
How do we square this with the idea that I, I subscribe to that meditation practice should be without efforting, or as little efforting as possible, that you should kind of phase out effort.
That's not the Buddha's teaching. No. The Buddha's teaching is that it requires a tremendous amount of effort, meditation practice, but it has to be skillful effort.
Well, yeah, that's what I mean.
It has to be skillful effort. So the thing of it is that you should only do, and you know, what you can do that's skillful, that's loving. If you can't put aside that aversion, then, you know, or at least to some extent, then, you know, you probably should curtail the meditation, or it should be a shorter period of meditation. The meditation should be loving and compassionate. And you can develop that skill to be able to do that. Now, if your past karma in terms of aversion is really strong, you're going to have to, it's going to take time for it to be loving and compassionate. So you build it up. That's why we tell people who are new, don't try to meditate any longer that you can meditate so that it isn't enjoyable and loving anymore. But you can build that skill and be able to do that, you know? It's a matter of skill. So you're right, you shouldn't meditate aversively, or you should learn to put aside what's aversive or if it's unpleasant. But ultimately, if you meditate from the heart, it's joyful. It's yeah. joyful. So it requires, and I write about this a lot in my book, it requires tremendous effort, but skillful effort. Skillful effort. And, you know, sometimes there can be too much effort, sort of like what we were saying before, you know? So it's finding the right amount of effort so that it's skillful.
Maybe the idea of not efforting is not doing the wrong kind of effort.
The Buddha didn't really teach not efforting. You know, that's, I mean, I don't teach that, you know? It requires a lot of effort. You know, those are more like Tibetan ideas and stuff. I mean, I'm not so well versed in them, but I it's not what the Buddha taught. He taught you got to make tremendous effort, but it has to be skillful. I have a bias on it. I think the idea of not efforting is sort of a way of getting out of having to make effort, you know, and to learn. I mean, the stuff that we're talking about today requires more practice and more skill and more attention to it, you know, and it takes time, but in the long run, you know, it's going to be to your benefit because you will develop a strong practice, but you have to have the skills. Did you have a question? No, you're just holding the mic. So, great, really good questions, and if anybody does have some that you want to talk to me about, I'm happy to do it after when we break for lunch, which we should do now because I want you guys to come back at 2, and that'll give you an hour and 20 minutes. So during lunch, we're going to continue to practice connecting to the heart in all postures. So think about lunch as a practice period. Even if you're going out, whatever you're doing, try to maintain silence, even if you're going out of the space, because again, we want to try to be in the body and into the heart. Generally, what that means is, you know, you really have to kind of ask, you know, is this the most loving thing to pick up the phone and make a call? Sometimes it is. Sometimes a parent has to call and check on their kid or whatever. Sometimes you're just doing it for a reason that isn't, you know, there's desire or whatever. So can you stay in the body, maintain silence, try to stay away from the devices, use the breath to stay in the body. Use the body. Try to have that full body awareness. It's a matter of touching in. You're not going to be mindful of the breath during this whole hour and 20 minutes, but you touch into it. You touch into the body. And then really work with skillful intention, just like I was saying before. So like right now, even as you're listening, you can just say to yourself, let me listen with loving kindness. Let me be here in this moment with compassion. As you're getting on the elevator, let me be on the elevator with loving kindness. You're walking down the street. Can I walk down the street with metta, with compassion? And again, it's touching into it. You know, the Buddha was really clear. If you try to do it the whole time, then you're going to start going into stories and narratives. Touch in. You touch in. Touch in. So during this hour and 20 minutes, try to stay in the body with the breath. Try to stay in the body. And then keep touching in to skillful intention. Keep touching in all postures and whatever you're doing. I'm going to eat. Let me eat with loving kindness, right? We actually teach not eating and being mindful so much of the food, but the breath, because it keeps you closer to the heart, you know, so that your eating is an act of loving kindness. That's so practice. Really look at this as, you know, you've really developed some good concentration here. So really look at this time as a time to practice. Just a few words about donations, teacher donation. I'm supported. That's how I live. I've been living for about 15 years off of Donna. I make a little bit of money, but not much, off of writing, mostly for Tricycle. So that's how I live. It's my life support. I've been able to do that and teach the Dharma for about 15 years off of what people have offered through generosity. So I think most people know, I think there's the baskets by the door and on the front table there if you want to make an offering. So thank you, guys.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.